So good morning, everyone. People near, people far away, welcome everybody. Well, this is, as Remick mentioned, you know, the first time we've done this kind of retreat like this, and I'm a little nervous. But also very, how should I put this? I feel very grateful. Really grateful that we can do this, grateful that you're here. I feel supported just seeing you. And I hope that this retreat will also be nourishing and supportive for you. And perhaps you'll be able to take away something from this retreat that you can share with others. Because, as we all know right now, the world, the whole world, not just our warm places, but the whole world really needs a lot of compassion, tenderness, and I think also equanimity. Someone mentioned, I can't remember who, they were a little bit, thought it was fortuitous that we had decided to make this retreat based or focused on equanimity. And this was before, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic. But surely equanimity is something that we do need to really focus on in our own life. And then also, as I said, something maybe we can share in the world. And this has become really kind of apparent to me, really strong, because over the past few months, quite a few people have told me that their world feels kind of upside down, that nothing seems certain or stable anymore. And perhaps you feel that way as well. As we know, the Buddha's teachings point out with very great clarity and over again that this has really always been the case. It's just that in times of great distress, like today, with the COVID-19 pandemic, we become much more aware of it. In fact, instability or impermanence during this time becomes one of the most evident truths about life. The Buddha, of course, as a young man, saw the examples of sickness, old age, and death. And he saw them in such a way that he awoke to the uncertainty and instability of his own life and of the lives of those he loved. And that awakening sparked his spiritual quest, which led him to cultivate qualities like compassion, wisdom, loving kindness, equanimity. So my deep wish is that this crisis that we're all in right now will help us to also cultivate those same qualities. Now, during this retreat, we're going to look closely at the various characteristics or aspects of equanimity and explore how equanimity and the cultivation of equanimity may benefit ourselves and, of course, benefit others. It's really, really important for us to understand the Buddhist view of equanimity, to understand how it supports other qualities like compassion, loving kindness, and how it gives us the capacity to remain upright and open-hearted through the various storms of our own life. Green tea. The flow of the river is ceaseless, and its water is never the same. The bubbles that float in the pools, now vanishing, now forming, are not of long duration. So in the world are humankind and our dwellings. This is a quote from the Hojoki, a record of witness written in the 1100s by a Japanese Buddhist priest who saw much suffering in Kyoto, then the capital of Japan. And I'd like to read you one more passage from the Hojoki. It's quite graphic and disturbing because it is a witness, a writing of being a witness during a time of tremendous chaos. After he describes a year of famine and the ongoing military conflict within the capital that was happening at that time, he wrote this. After a year of such suffering, people hoped the new year would be better. But the misery increased, as in addition to the famine, the people were afflicted by contagious disease. Everyone suffered from malnutrition until gradually to say that all fish will choke in shallow water, a traditional Japanese saying would fit very well. Now, even those wearing bamboo hats with legs wrapped in leggings, which means they were not bad off, they walked frantically from house to house begging. I saw beggars of this kind as they were walking suddenly collapse and die. Close to the roofed mud wall at the side of the road, the number of bodies of the dead from starvation continuously increased, because no one even tried to clear them away. The odor of the putrefaction became offensive throughout the capital, and people could not even stand to look at them. The city was permeated with the smell, and the mountain of corpses accumulated along the Kamo riverbed until there were places where horses and carriages could not pass. When I first read this during my university days, it seemed like a terrible and vivid description of a conflict and place far away long ago. These days, however, conflict and controversy, even in very far away places, touches us all. The great disputes and wars of distant lands are brought right into our homes. Angry debates over political, racial, and economic differences all clamor for our attention. The climate crisis is becoming more and more evident, and yet, as we all know, there is no unified response. Reading a newspaper, listening to the news, fear, anger, resentment, and panic seem to be the dominant emotions in the world. And all of this leaves us with the question, how shall I respond? And also, you know, in our private lives too, personal disputes flare up, wrenching holes in our relationships. And again, the question, how shall I respond? And now, of course, during this time of the COVID-19 pandemic, how shall I respond? At times, I find myself nursing tight, angry thoughts. Sometimes I sink into a kind of hopelessness. And at other times, I find myself turning away from the painful news or situation, and I start to seek distraction. Now I say deliberately, find myself, Because finding myself is when I notice it. And my commitment as a Zen priest is not to hanger, to harbor anger, not to indulge in despair or turn away. But I do. I do fall into such states without noticing. A reactive response, perhaps. And then a bit later, or sometimes much, much later, I find myself. I find the self that made the vow not to turn away, not to indulge in despair, not to nurse my anger. And then I recommit again to my vows. But of course, it's not easy. Recently, as a number of you know, I spent a week in a solo retreat, a week of almost total silence and almost no interaction with others. Not even eye greetings, kind of where you say hello and smile at someone, with a few others who were at the same retreat center that I was at. I did not listen or read any news. And after a few days, I felt buoyant and light, heart open, and a general sense of kindness pervaded the days. And calmness and equanimity arose. And looking back on it, while this time was very nourishing and I needed it, it was also artificial in a sense. I remember the comments of Chosen Roshi, a co-abbot at the Great Vow Monastery in Oregon. The comments she made when another Buddhist teacher who was there presenting was going on and on about the kindness, warmth, and calm depths of the Himalayan hermits he was helping researchers to make contact. The Chosen said something like, "Of course, those Himalayan hermits are equanimous. They don't have to deal with anybody. We who live in the world have to deal with our spouse, lover, friends, teachers, bosses, kids, and the many others that we bump into during our work and daily life." And then there is dealing with the strife of the world that kind of lies mostly outside of our daily lives, with so many incidents of greed, anger, violence, confusion. Yeah, the life of the hermit, eh? Not having to deal with that kind of stuff. Haven't most of us, at least at some point, thought of becoming a hermit in some kind of beautiful, isolated spot, getting away? While we may think that the strife and difficulty of our lives is largely a product of these times, maybe a product of modernity, that life was easier, better, you know, 100, 200, 300 years ago, this same kind of constant strife was also the case during the Heian period of Japan, when the Hojoki was written that I just quoted from. And this was also true of the time of the Buddha. In the Jata Sutta, an early Buddhist text, there's a small passage called The Tangle. I'll just read it to you. At Savatthi, when the Brahmin Jata went to the Blessed One and on arrival exchanged courteous greetings with him, and after this exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, he sat down to one side. As he was sitting there, he addressed the Blessed One with a verse. A tangle within, a tangle without. People are entangled in a tangle. Gotama, I ask you this. Who can untangle this tangle? A tangle within, a tangle without. Doesn't your life feel like that at times? Just one big tangle, maybe kind of a painful mess. A tangle within, a tangle without. People are entangled in a tangle. Now, this verse kind of reminds me of our repentance verse that we chant. All my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born from body, speech, and mind. So, around 500 BCE, this Brahman Jata saw the tension and confusion of his world as his world was changing radically. For one thing, gaining economic and political power became the main preoccupation of those in power, rather than the earlier cooperative village life that had been so widespread throughout India. The Brahman Jata also saw the callousness and disconnect that larger societies, such as cities, start when cities begin to form. And these were just starting to form for the first time on the Indo-Gangetic plain. And he saw the tension and wars between the many small monarchies and republics that were established at the time. And of course, I'm sure he saw the pain and suffering that is simply part of the human condition. So the Buddha answered Jata, and he answered it with this verse. A person established in virtue, discerning, developing discernment in mind, is a practitioner, ardent and astute. She can untangle this tangle. I found it interesting that in his answer, the Buddha did not give Jata or us a solution to fix the world. He gave us a way to be upright, to have poise, and to be open, all amidst the chaos of the world. Untangle the tangle is the ability to truly meet and respond to the world and life as they are, rather than how we wish them to be. And this is the gift of equanimity. Equanimity is a translation of the Pali word upekkha, or in Sanskrit, the upeksha. The etymology of these words, because they're both connected, of course, the etymology is not clear. But the original meaning might have been something like to look upon. So the term upekkha, or equanimity, is really found all throughout the Buddhist canon and in several extremely important lists. For example, it's one of the four divine abodes, the Brahma Viharas, the others being loving kindness, compassion, and joy. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. It's also one of the 10 wholesome mental factors within the Mahayana Abhidharma teaching. It's one of the 10 paramitas, according to the Theravadin tradition. And it's a mental factor that arises during the fourth jhana, or a deep state of concentration. And finally, it's also one of the 7 factors of awakening. Now, there's no need for us to really go into what all these lists are and what each of the components mean. But it's interesting to note that upeksha, or equanimity is almost always listed last, at the very end. Perhaps it's a signal that this quality of equanimity supports all the other qualities. Clearly, though, this equanimity is a quality highly regarded throughout the Buddhist tradition. So let's have just a quick look at the word in English. In English, the word equanimity originally meant fairness or impartiality in the 17th century. And it came into English through French with the original Latin meaning equal mind. Equal mind. So we could say that an equal mind is a mind that is stable and a mind that is unbiased. It's a mind that can choose. It's a mind that can respond, or rather than simply react. A couple of years ago, I had this experience. A student who seldomly came to the SFU class that I was teaching at the time and had not handed in any of his assignments, finally came to see me towards the end of the academic term after I had sent several terse emails to him to kind of get him going. And that day, I was kind of cranky over several things. And I was kind of not ready to cut him any slack. In fact, I just kind of wanted to dismiss him. I noticed in myself a little eagerness to, like, just give him an F and send him on his way. Teach him a lesson. Teachers do feel that way sometimes, just to let you know. Anyway, he came into my office, this young man, and to me he appeared to be sullen. Although now when I reflect back on it, I wonder if it was my projection. Anyway, he started muttering about needing more time, being busy with other important courses, and he was a business major, and of course, business courses are always more important than anything else. But he admitted he also needed my course to graduate at the end of term. I had little sympathy at that point, thinking about the extra work it would mean, giving him makeup assignments. But that day, and I have to admit, I'm not quite sure why. Maybe there was a spark of equanimity in me. I chose to probe a little bit more. Yeah, there must have been a small glowing ember of equanimity kind of deep within me somewhere where I couldn't quite see it. How quickly a situation can change when we see beyond judgment and beyond our own self-interest. Reluctant at first, as I probed, he told me that he and his wife were from Syria. I still see him. And in the chaos going on at that time, he had lost contact with his close relatives and didn't know if they were alive, injured or dead. He told me that he was really struggling with depression and anxiety. He told me he was thinking of quitting before graduating because he felt ashamed at not keeping up. That experience with my young student taught me yet again to rein back my reaction and to open up what is beyond my assumptions. Now, I don't put this to you as a strong example of equanimity, although I believe there must have been some equanimity in me present at that time. But for me, it was a profound and deep lesson. That cultivating equanimity can help me to help us have an equal mind, a balanced mind and heart that can accept and open and free us from becoming a puppet of our reactions. I know sometimes equanimity is considered to be, at least by some people, a kind of dry aloofness, a mind and heart that is kind of cool and kind of distant, maybe even uncaring. In the Buddhist tradition, these are known as the near enemies of equanimity, and we'll discuss them a little bit more tomorrow. In the Buddhist understanding, equanimity is the deep and constant awareness of the impermanence and the interconnection of all things. It is the soil out of which arises wisdom and compassion. The Buddha described an equanimous mind as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So equanimity, and from now on I'm using this as it's understood in the Buddhist tradition, the way I just described it, is really a very balanced and a reflective stance. Through our equanimity, we see clearly what arises with a kind of evenness of mind and heart, a mind that is open to the present, but also steady in the face of the present moment's constantly shifting nature. In the Buddhist tradition, in various texts, equanimity is described having the characteristics of stillness, strength, ease, and compassion. So this is far from the uncaring and aloof character that equanimity is sometimes painted with in the West. Like all positive qualities, the cultivation of equanimity begins with the individual. There are times when, from our conditioning, meanness or sarcasm directed to oneself or to others will simply arise in the mind. And through our practice of awareness, though we set our intention to neither identify with those thoughts nor reject them. So for example, you know, in our Zazen practice, we cultivate a spacious and kind of non-judgmental awareness that can observe any meanness or derision that arises in our minds and hearts. Observe them without reacting, without sinking into guilt or pushing them away. Equanimity entails a radical acceptance of who you are and who the other person is. It is a saying of yes to the beauty, and it is also a witnessing of the flaws and warts of our life. Equanimity, this spacious awareness, is able to contain whatever arises in our minds and hearts, pleasant or unpleasant, magnificent or vile, with nothing left out. Our bodhisattva vows, the vows to bring forth kindness, compassion, understanding, and support into this troubled world, begin, they all begin with a non-reactive witnessing and an accepting of oneself, of the other, and of the situation. And through the cultivation of awareness and mindfulness, as we do in our Zazen practice, equanimity grows. We come to recognize the various outflowings of the mind and not react immediately. So in this way, we kind of develop the capacity to remain grounded in the presence of extreme circumstances. We can say to ourselves, ah, this moment is like this. I can accept that. I can accept this moment as it is here. And I will offer what I can. Or more simply, we could say something like, ah, now this. Now this. How shall I respond? So equanimity gives us resilience, because equanimity rests in constant awareness of the impermanence and the interconnectedness of all things, as I mentioned earlier. Here's another kind of view. About 13.8 billion years ago, this cosmos began from a singularity, according to the leading explanation found about how the universe began on Wikipedia. All the stuff of the universe today forms a vast net reaching all the way back to that singularity. Nothing stands outside of this vast net. Joanna Macy, the famed deep ecologist, wrote this. Out of that vast net, you cannot fall. No stupidity or failure or cowardice can ever sever you from this living, ever-changing web. For that is what you are. Rest in that knowing. Rest in the great peace. Out of it, we act, we can dare anything, and let every encounter be a homecoming to our true nature. Indeed, it is so. Joanna Macy claimed this sense of belonging as the very foundation of equanimity. She wrote, I am part of this vast story. We are part of that vast story. She reminds us of our connection to this ever-changing net. She awakens us that this can be a source of courage and a source of composure and calmness. This is a vast story. This reminded me, you know, of our bodhisattva vows. We hold our bodhisattva vows, right? To save all beings, to end all delusions, to enter all dharma gates, etc., with the same sense of courage and equanimity, recognizing the vastness of our vows, not frightened and repelled by the messiness and suffering of the world and life, we move towards it rather than away. We act, doing what we can, not overwhelmed by what still needs to be done. Because, as we all know, an overwhelmed bodhisattva is kind of like a crabby teacher or a crabby priest. Not much good for anything. Returning to our equanimity allows us to be in for the long haul. Perhaps we'll be in for another 13.8 billion years. Out of that vast net you cannot fall. Let every encounter be a homecoming to our true nature, Joanna Macy wrote. A few weeks ago, we had our annual Dogen retreat. And Dogen was the Japanese priest who brought this form of Zen practice from China to Japan in the 1200s. And Kate talked about about a Dogen writing called Uji, Being Time. And in the short text, Dogen breaks down the kind of naive distinction we often make between being and time, as if they were two separate things. Dogen wrote, "Time itself is being, and all being is all time. All being is all time. We are 13.8 billion years old. The ground of our equanimity arises from this." Throughout Dogen's writing, there's another phrase that may be loosely translated. While this is so, you must actualize it. While this is so, you must actualize it. So how do we actualize our equanimity? For now, consider how our Zazen and daily mindfulness practices will help us be attentive. And just being attentive directs us towards equanimity. Equanimity is not always as we imagine. There can be equanimity in the midst of great activity, like the eye, like the calm in the eye of a hurricane, for example. We've all seen Asian martial arts in various films, right? Very flashy. But to see a traditionally trained, well-seasoned martial arts practitioner move with grace, dignity, and flowing power while being attacked by several opponents is very inspirational. At that time, there is no planning, no judgment, just full acceptance and meeting of the moment and responding. One way to actualize equanimity, particularly in a traditional meditation, is using a phrase or a set of phrases that's often repeated silently to oneself during the meditation. And I prepared a sheet of some suggested phrases, and I think you have that already. It was sent out. But I also encourage you to think about, you know, look at them, see if they're helpful, but also create your own phrases, phrases that resonate with you, phrases that reflect your aspiration for a calm center from which may arise some kind of fruitful activity. So we're going to practice this afternoon. But I thought I'd like us just to meditate together for a few minutes, using a few phrases that I'll suggest right now. So if you would just kind of take the meditation posture And just think for a moment or two, for you right now, what kind of situation is difficult, is challenging, kind of hard for you to accept? Tomorrow maybe we'll focus more on people, but for now, what is a situation perhaps that for you evokes something like anger or worry or despair? You know, sense for a moment that reactive feeling that arises. Notice if there's attached to it any assumptions or expectations. It shouldn't be this way. What's wrong with the world? So, having some situation that for you at this moment evokes concern, worry, anger, or even bitterness. Just rest in the breath for a moment or two. And then repeat silently to yourself, after I say them, these four phrases. And we'll do this maybe three times, and then we'll end. I open to this as it is. May I meet this, centered and still inside. May I be calm and spacious. I open to this as it is. May I meet this centered and still inside. May I be calm and spacious. I open to this as it is. May I meet this centered and still inside. May I be calm and spacious. We'll stop here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm looking forward to sitting with you some more, and then also again this afternoon. So now we'll do the... Oops.
something to do with my...
Oh, there. Ta-da!
May our intention equally...